This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and editors about politics. It's Thursday, May 19th. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker. Last Saturday, during a commencement speech at Bridgewater State University in Massachusetts, Senator Elizabeth Warren emerged as a surrogate for Hillary Clinton.
On my day of graduation, I never imagined I would visit foreign countries. I never imagined I would be a commencement speaker. I never imagined I would get into a Twitter war with Donald Trump. But here I am, living the life.
Margaret Talbot joins me to discuss Senator Warren and Bernie Sanders, who was looking for a while like a potential surrogate himself, but who's looking more and more like a spoiler. Here's what he said on Tuesday in a rally in Carson, California.
The Democratic Party is going to have to make a very, very profound and important decision. It can do the right thing and open its doors and welcome into the party people who are prepared to fight for real economic and social change. The other option for the Democratic Party, which I see as a very sad and tragic option, is to choose to remain dependent on big money campaign contributions and be a party with limited participation and limited energy.
Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Dorothy.
On May 3rd, Warren tweeted that there is more enthusiasm for Trump among leaders of the KKK than leaders of his political party. Not so long ago, quite a number of liberals thought that Warren should run for president. Now she seems to be auditioning for Clinton's vice presidential nominee.
Well, you know, I think a lot of progressives would be very happy about that. She seems less inclined to be ruling it out than she did in the past, which is a sort of mild way of putting it, I guess. But she does certainly seem to be enjoying, more than almost anyone else involved in this race right now, the role of dissing Donald Trump for the Democrats and for Hillary. She's been in this Twitter war. She seems to be having fun. She goes on Colbert. She really seems to relish this role. So in a crazy election season, I think it could be an interesting move and maybe an effective one for Hillary to pick her if Warren were willing. But even if she isn't willing to be a running mate, I do think she makes a very effective attack dog surrogate.
You wrote a little bit about this in a piece for NewYorker.com this week. What do you think, realistically, the possibilities for a two-woman ticket would be?
It certainly goes against all the conventional thinking of, you know, elections up till this very strange election year, that you want to have demographic balance, you want to have geographic balance, two women would be risky and foolhardy. But, you know, people have been making the argument, Michelle Goldberg and Slate and others, progressive Democrats, that everything is up for grabs in this election year. And, you know, that maybe doing something really bold like this and kind of doubling down on the woman card, to combine a lot of metaphors there, you know, would be the way to go. It would be exhilarating. Also, it would be effective in the sense that Warren represents the progressive populist wing of the party and has all of Sanders's credentials, you know, being a critic and watchdog of Wall Street. And I think she would help ensure that some of those voters who seem so disaffected right now, the Bernie supporters, might be more likely to come out and support the Clinton ticket.
Are there other potential candidates on the left whom Clinton might be thinking about if she decides to go that route?
One other candidate people have been mentioning a lot is Sherrod Brown, the senator from Ohio, who also represents that kind of populist wing. He's been a real critic of trade deals in the way that Sanders and also in his own way Trump are. And he's got kind of a, I don't know, gruff, gravelly-voiced, rough-hewn charm, I guess. And so he's been mentioned a lot. One problem with him is if they were elected and he became vice president, then that would free up his seat to be appointed by John Kasich. So, you know, some people say don't take him out of the Senate at this moment. That's a worry.
I don't know about you, but I feel like we're hearing less nervous laughter about Trump these days among Democrats and more alarm. And the prospect of him winning the presidency is now being discussed. Is it just the current conventional wisdom, or are there new numbers about how he could win?
Well, you know, I know that we need to look at polls this early in the game with, you know, take them with a grain of salt, and a lot obviously can change. But there was a poll, an NBC poll this week, that showed Clinton with an edge of only 3 points in a matchup with Trump. I think that may be the slimmest lead she's had in any polls yet. There's also been this worrying phenomenon that's been reported on a little bit of sort of speculation that there may be kind of stealth Trump supporters who aren't telling pollsters that they are supporters. They're a little embarrassed about it. And what that's suggested by is the fact that people in online polls, where they're not face-to-face or on a phone conversation with a pollster, are more likely to say they support Trump. So I don't know. I think there's a little bit of cause for worry. I certainly feel it. I'm here in D.C. and among people I know a little bit more than I have up till now, and I don't think it's completely nuts to be a little worried at this point. You know, also, the Republicans do seem to be lining up behind Trump in their kind of organized GOP way, and of course, the Democrats are still in this fierce fight between Sanders and Clinton.
Well, and that has gotten uglier lately. You know, there were the supporters in Nevada throwing chairs at the state Democratic convention and yelling threats about the apportionment of superdelegates. And Bernie didn't exactly calm the waters in his statement afterwards. It occurred to me that he and his supporters, they're beginning to sound a little like Trump. You know, the line about limited energy sounds quite familiar, for one.
There's definitely a lot of rowdiness and resentment among some supporters of Bernie's right now, and a lot of feeling of we are not going to go down without a fight, and we're going to stick with the primaries till the end, and now a lot of thought about, I mean, I think on the more positive side, about Sanders having an influence at the convention on the platform and bringing more progressive ideas into it, but then also some sort of threats about, you know, rioting and demonstrations outside the convention. Van Jones, the CNN political commentator and activist, had an interesting comment this week. He was saying that he thinks both Hillary and Bernie kind of misunderstand the Sanders movement at the moment, the anger from these supporters, that Hillary just sees it as a bunch of rowdy kids who will calm down and fall into line, but Bernie sees only the good in his followers and really misunderstands that there's a nasty edge to some of the following that he's not taking seriously enough.
Hillary certainly does seem to misunderstand it, as you can see in her falling poll numbers.
Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit NewYorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount.
I also wanted to ask you, since you covered Bernie Sanders early in the campaign, about his campaign manager, Jeff Weaver, who's been pretty contemptuous all along of the establishment. And the Times reported this morning, I think, that he's among those on the campaign that has been pushing Bernie to go tougher.
I think so. And it sounds like there are more divisions within the campaign now, that there are people who are really worried about that. And, you know, Weaver is not among them. He's one who's pushing for this kind of last stand. When I wrote this piece about Sanders last summer, when I, you know, really would have been surprised to know how, I mean, he's had 10 million votes. He's done very, very well, and that he's been able to stick with it this long is surprising. But what isn't surprising is people did tell me at the time, you know, he is kind of in it to win it. He is not doing this as a sort of quixotic protest campaign. He has that determination and always has in his political career. So in a way, that part doesn't surprise me that he is so perseverative about this here at the end.
Is it possible that the entire election could come down to what Bernie Sanders decides to do?
I think it is possible. It's amazing. I think it is possible.
You know, Clinton does have another ostensibly invaluable surrogate, true surrogate, her husband. But Bill Clinton has been unpredictable and not always helpful on the campaign trail, which was also true, by the way, in 2008. How do you think that's playing out?
Yeah, that's been a bit of a surprise because I think a lot of people still thought, you know, he has pretty high approval ratings, although since he's begun campaigning for Hillary, they've actually fallen. And people have this kind of memory of him as this super effective politician, especially in, you know, meeting people up close and personal and being warm and empathic and all of that. And he has not really shown that side. He seemed very subdued. He's had a couple of awkward moments, like with a Black Lives Matter protester where he got very defensive in talking about his criminal justice record. So he's not been a great boon to her so far, I would say. And then there are concerns that Trump is going to bring up Clinton's history with Monica Lewinsky and Paula Jones and other women, and that this will also be dogging them throughout the fall.
One thing hasn't changed in this election. It, too, is likely to come down to economic issues. We all remember 1980 when Ronald Reagan asked his famous question, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And he walloped Jimmy Carter and the third party nominee, John Anderson. The country's totally different now with very different candidates. But the voters who are causing all of the trouble to the two parties are asking themselves that question yet again, much more angrily than they were then.
I think the fact that there is so much wage deflation, that people are feeling so economically fragile and insecure, that so many fewer Americans now subjectively identify as being middle class, that economic inequality is a problem that not only undergirds politics today, but that people sort of recognize as doing that, which I think, you know, for a long time, a lot of people did not recognize the extent of that problem. All of those things, yeah, are making middle class families, working class families legitimately look for a more powerful solution to their problems. And so I don't think we can, you know, completely dismiss the support for Trump and certainly not for Sanders as some sort of irrational eruption of anger. There is substance to it.
And this is where Hillary's rigidity as a campaigner just it manifests itself. What she's doing is invoking the years of Bill Clinton's administration, which was very good economically, and Barack Obama's. She's just kind of sticking to those talking points, but it isn't working. So what can she do? She is who she is. These are the issues that she has laid out for herself. She's a policy wonk through and through. What can she do?
I don't think somebody like that can change that much in 3 to 6 months. So I think what she can do is pick somebody like Warren or maybe Brown, who can speak to these issues with real passion and has that populist kind of bent. I think that's probably what she needs to do.
Thanks so much, Margaret.
Thank you.
Margaret Talbot is a New Yorker staff writer and the author of The Entertainer, Movies, Magic, and My Father's 20th Century. This has been The Political Scene from The New Yorker. You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app. You can find more political analysis and commentary from Margaret Talbot and others on NewYorker.com or on The New Yorker app, available at no extra charge from the App Store and Google Play. Tell us what you thought about this podcast. Rate and review the Politics and More podcast on iTunes. This podcast is produced by Alex Barron and Jill Duboff for NewYorker.com. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.